next case is 052209 et al. Discount Cellular, Inc. versus the Public Utilities Commission of Ohio. Mr. Hart.
Mr. Chief Justice, and may it please the court, my name is Randy Hart, and I represent the appellants in this matter. The last case that you just heard did not concern me, but one point that the Chief Justice made did. He's interested in the law, and so are my clients. The law in this case provides in 111.15 of the Ohio Revised Code that any rule having general and uniform application be submitted to JCAR, the Legislative Service Commission, and the Secretary of State, and be codified in the Ohio Administrative Code so everybody can know what it is. 111.15 also provides that a rule can be a rescission of a rule, or in fact, when you rescind a rule, that is in fact a rule that's subject to 111.15. In this case, the 563 order, which was the prior scheme that regulated wireless providers in this state, has been rescinded by the 1700 order. But the 1700 order did not get codified. It's nowhere to be found in the administrative code or any other codified site. The citizens of the state of Ohio have the statutes which they can look at, and they can determine what the law is through the statutes. They can look at the law that's provided in the Constitution, and they can look at the law that's provided in the administrative code. But with respect to the rules and regulations here, they were never put in the administrative code. The rules and regulations provided in 111.15 were never complied with.
Council, this is a public utilities matter.
Correct.
Is it the norm that public utilities, the commission goes through JCAR?
In a case like this, Your Honor, we don't have, this isn't a situation.
I don't know why, but I just don't associate PUCO actions as something that goes through JCAR.
Let me give you an example, if I can. The Public Utilities Commission established minimum telephone service standards with respect to local telephone systems in Ohio. And those minimum telephone service standards list the rules and regulations that are applicable to the telephone companies and provide a mechanism for consumers to come in and complain about those things. Those have general and uniform operation. It's not a complaint case where you have one litigant suing a public utility for a particular dispute, but it has general and uniform operation for the entire industry. That's what 111.15 is meant to apply to, issues where there is general and uniform operation, not a specific case-by-case adjudication or the adjudication of the merits of somebody's individual dispute. 111.15 is very specific. It says whenever you have something, and they define it as a rule, a regulation, a bylaw, a standard, very broad. And what they say is that any time you have something like that that comes out of the commission, such as the minimum telephone service standards or such as rules and regulations that are going to now apply to the wireless industry, whenever you have something that's that all-encompassing, that has to comply with JCAR. And in fact,
And they do, in fact, run
they
those
do
through.
It.
There is a precedent of running those kinds of rules through JCAR.
Correct.
Right.
And in fact.
So then the dispute here that you have is that they didn't do it here, and your belief is they were required to because of the scope of the rule.
That's correct, Your Honor. And in fact, if you recall, I said the 563 rules were the original rules that applied to the wireless industry. Those rules were not codified. They didn't go through the 111-15 process. And what happened was in 1997, the legislature saw that. And what they did in the Budget Act of 1997 was they specifically put in a provision that ratified all actions of the commission as if those actions had gone through the legislative process of JCAR, LSC, and everything else that's in 115. And they said that from that point forward, they were making it clear that 111-15 does apply to the commission and they have to submit those things. 1700 order is just taking away the 563 rules. That's what it did. It rescinded them. So the 563 rules should have been filed under JCAR and was only saved by this Budget Act provision. Certainly the rescission should comply also with 111-15 because that's what the plain language of the statute says. If you just look at the statute and apply the statute as it stated, there's no question there was a rescission and there's no question that these were rules. The commission would say that they're just orders. I don't see the distinction in 111-15. It's just simply not there.
But Mr. Hart, isn't the real issue here or the real statute that we should be looking at 4927.03A1? That's the specific one that talks about the PUCO being allowed to exempt any company from an application of rule or order. So really what you're arguing under 115 is not relevant, is it?
It is relevant, Your Honor, because there's no exemption in 115 for the alt-reg provisions that are in 4927. 4927 are the alternative regulation provisions that took the carriers from a position of rate of return regulation and provided alternative regulation. When they issued 111-15, there's nothing in there that exempts 111-15 in the situation of 4927. Further, the commission argues that 4927A applies. I believe 4927D applies, because 4927A would apply when you're issuing new regulations. The commission argues that this is a new regulation because they took away the complaint statute in the 1700 rules, and that the complaint statute wasn't implicated in the 563 rules, but that's just not right, because if you look at your appendix at page 170, the complaint statute in 4905 is in the original order. They use the term modify in 4927D. I know this is a slightly different argument, Your Honor, but they use the term modify in 4927D, and even in 4927D you would need notice in a hearing. That wasn't complied with, but that's a different argument about whether these are supposed to be going through JCAR, et cetera, through 111-15.
But isn't the real issue exemption? Isn't that really the issue that you're complaining about here, the exemption of the rules?
No, rather
than the fact that this did not go through JCAR. Is that your real issue here?
No, my real issue here with respect to JCAR is simply that you've got a system of law in this state. It says every time the commission issues rules of general application, you need to comply with this specific rule that gets the rules put into the administrative code so that I, as a citizen, can go to the administrative code and find it. There's nothing inconsistent about requiring rules and regulations of the commission to go through JCAR and get put in the administrative code and allowing alternative regulation under 4927. You can do both. In this particular situation, the commission believes that it's deregulated, not that the carriers are being deregulated under 4927. It believes that it doesn't have to comply with the provisions of 111-15 when, in fact, there's no out in 111-15. And when you look at the Budget Act from 97, the legislature specifically said that the commission is subject to 111-15. The Budget Act came out in 97. 4927 came out in 98, or in 89, almost 8 years earlier. If the legislature wanted to exempt the commission from 111-15, they wouldn't have put in a Budget Act that said they have to comply with 111-15. They knew that the alt-reg provision was already there, and they didn't do anything about it. So there's no out in the alternative regulation provisions for the 111 requirements. You just need to know where the law is. So my real problem is that I can't go anywhere and find the law that relates to this particular issue. I also want to talk about the retroactive application of this particular provision, the 1700 order. 1.58 of the Ohio Revised Code provides that you can't, that you cannot enact a retroactive piece of legislation or a retroactive rule. This court in the Opie case found that it applied to the Public Utilities Commission. Also, the Ohio Constitution says the same thing. You can't retroactively apply a law. In this particular case, what the PUC did was 563 order is in effect until 99. In 99, they issued the 1700 order. Any rights that you have accrued up until that point in time, we're not going to let you hear. That's specifically what is prevented by the retroactivity statutes. In fact, in the OPIE case itself, it says that if you take away the complaint statute, 4905.26, that would directly violate 1.58. Well, that's what we have in this situation. We have retroactive application of the law by the commission.
Counsel, let's say you're right on that point. The PUCO had alternative grounds listed, arguably, because I know that's part of your argument. But I guess my specific question is, where in your application for rehearing do you claim that the PUCO applied the wrong legal standard when reviewing the motion to dismiss?
In our application for, first of all, the issue wasn't raised.
Because I've read it, and I don't see the argument stated in your proposition of law number 7. I don't see that specific argument made in your application for rehearing.
Your Honor, my first point is that I do believe that it is within number 7. We do believe that catches it. However,
can you point me to some language in the application to make that connection? Maybe I missed it when I read it.
I believe it's the entire language of that section, the entirety of it. But I would point out, Your Honor, in this particular situation, it wasn't until the commission had already ruled on rehearing in the Discount Cellular case that they ever raised that issue. At that point, we have no ability to raise anything else because the rehearing has been raised. We've already done all of our briefing. When the commission comes out with a new decision at that point in time, I have no ability to go back in and raise a new argument. The commission never raised it in the never raised that issue in the Discount Cellular case, so there was no reason to raise it here.
But couldn't you have filed a second application for rehearing?
No, you're not allowed, Your Honor. You're prohibited from doing that. You can only file one application for rehearing at
the
commission.
Can you point me to a statute or rule that says that? The statute that's cited in the brief says just any order. It doesn't limit it in any way.
I can't cite you to a statute that says that you cannot file two applications for rehearing in the same case, but I know that 4903.10 provides that you can file a application for rehearing.
Well, actually, what it says actually is after any order has been made by the Public Utilities Commission. You know, obviously an order denying your application for rehearing would be an order. If they raised something new, I'm not sure I see in 4903.10 a reason why you couldn't have filed another one, making the very argument you're now making.
Your Honor, I believe that after the commission issues its entry on rehearing, the only thing that I can do at that point is file an appeal at this court. I'd like to reserve my remaining time for rebuttal unless there are further questions.
Thank you, Mr. Hart. Mr. Norse.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, I'd like to reserve 3 minutes for Mr. Wallach and Mr. Gassaway. I'd like to go back and explain from the legislator's standpoint what happened. In the 80s, in 1985, the commission issued the so-called 944 order that had implemented relaxed regulation and had some alternative requirements to the extent they could under the existing framework. In 1989, the legislature realized that the commission had done what it could under that framework, implemented the House Bill 563, and which is RC Chapter 4927, and the commission then in the early 90s implemented the 563 order and issued certain exemptions pertinent here to the wholesale cellular industry. And I'll note that the retail cellular providers have never been considered public utilities under Title 49 and have never been regulated. So this deals with the wholesale market. In the late 90s then, The commission further deregulated in the 97-1700 case in 1999. The commission decided to virtually eliminate any regulation of the cellular wholesale cellular market, and this is all based on the premise of 4927, is that regulation is only justified if there's the absence of competition, and competition replaces regulation. So the General Assembly has instructed the Commission to eliminate regulatory requirements as competition grows. And certainly in the telecommunications industry, there's no area more clearly in an advanced state of competition than the cellular industry. And in fact, the appellants today
That would be at the retail level.
That's at the retail level, and as evidenced by the wholesale level as well. They function together.
It's true at the wholesale level as well.
Yes, and the FCC has since deregulated the resale requirement as well, based on that advanced state of competition. And the appellants here don't challenge the substance of what the commission did in 1999. They don't challenge the fact that the General Assembly told the commission to deregulate when competition exists. They don't challenge the fact that competition was in an advanced state and that mandated regulation be eliminated. They do challenge these procedural grounds, which I'd like to address. And I will try to address them briefly in the same order that Mr. Hart did. With respect to the JCAR statutes, you know, it is true that currently the commission complies with JCAR and is subject to JCAR when it makes rules, generally speaking. I disagree with the premise of what counsel said about the 1997 legislation as being premised on the commission not complying with the law at the time. That's not true. The commission always had an exemption from the full-blown JCAR process in 111, and the legislature simply decided to, they validated everything the commission had done up to that point, and said from henceforth JCAR will apply. But the pertinent point here is that 4927.03a, this is the statute that applies to what the commission did in 1999. Just like to briefly read part of that statute. And it provides for a notice and comment process, and it says the commission may, by order, exempt any telephone company or companies as to any public telecommunications service from any provision of Chapter 4905, et cetera, and it lists other statutes. 4905.26 is the statute the commission in 1999 decided to exempt, and that was for the first time. The commission had never modified the statute, the complaint statute, as to this cellular industry previous to the 99 decision. This is the first time that was done.
Is opposing counsel correct that what the commission did when they took this action was industry-wide instead of company-specific?
It applied to a group of companies, Your Honor. Again, as I indicated earlier, this was already a narrow subset of the telecommunications.
When they adopted it, the style of it was in the matter of company A's, B, and C? Or was it a...
It was a category, Your Honor.
So then it was of universal application.
It was a narrow subset. You know, the telecommunications industry...
It didn't specify any particular corporation.
No, it was a category
business
of exemptions. But again, A1, and A1 specifically says the commission can apply that to telephone company or companies, and indicates by the language that it can do it by group. And it specifically indicates regarding this rulemaking
and
argument.
At the time, weren't there appeals by companies who felt they would be affected, and didn't the commission take the position that those appeals weren't ripe because there was no specific application to a specific company?
Yes, this same attorney representing different clients had taken an appeal from the rulemaking at that time.
And the commission urged us to dismiss on the basis that the rule was of
Right.
Universal application and didn't, there wasn't a case in controversy at that time.
And, Your Honor, I worked on that case as well, and the court dismissed. We've never claimed in this case that this is the improper time to raise right. these arguments. We didn't move for dismissal. This is before the court. But again, the statute, 03A, specifically allows the commission to do this by order. It's not a rule. It wasn't a rulemaking. It was a category of exemptions.
Tell me why. I read your arguments. Tell me, what's your strongest argument as to why this is not a rule and it is an order? You've touched on it in response to Justice Piper's question. What's your strongest argument?
Well, Your Honor, I think this is an exemption, plain and simple, by the term of statute and by the common usage of it. Where the PUCO did not implement rules. They did not implement regulations. They were simply eliminating a statute. The prior set of exemptions in 563 were never codified. And, you know, eliminating something that was never codified, you know, it doesn't qualify as a rule. It doesn't make sense to codify.
It could, couldn't it, if you went beyond just eliminating something that wasn't codified and said more, that could be a rule, and if it had general application.
Well, under some circumstances, it could, Your Honor, if you're eliminating a rule. But again, this is a, you know, it's a term of art that the General Assembly's used. They distinguished the many other places in Title 49 where they talk about rules. This is an exemption, and that's what the General Assembly allowed the Commission to do by order after notice and comment. They provided a specific process. As was mentioned earlier, the general, is trumped by the specific, and the JCAR process has no application where the General Assembly's authorized the Commission to do something by order.
Mr. Norse, your position is that an exemption will always be an order rather than a rule because of the language of the statute?
That's correct. That's the way the Commission has always done it, and that's what the statute allows, Your Honor. So,
and since it is an order, then we don't worry about 111.
That's correct.
Okay, thank you.
And
let me just follow. So the Commission doesn't have any other document or announcement that would tell someone how to distinguish between an order and something that's not an order, that's a rule.
Well, in terms of, I don't know if you're asking, Your Honor, in terms of notice, the statute allows after simple public notice and comment. The commission followed that here. The appellants claim that they didn't have actual notice, but that's certainly not required by the statute. The commission did publish their regular sunshine notice when they put this entry in February of 97 out for comment. They also published it on their website, and they served it on as many parties as they could. They wanted to get as much input as they could into this policy decision. And in fact, many resellers, including the National Reseller Association, that purported in their comments in that docket to represent 650 resellers, had provided comments. And the list is in our brief, but the commission heard extensively from that industry and considered all those comments in reaching its policy decision.
Mr. Norse, the argument I think Mr. Hart is making is that 492703D requires some notice, and his complaint isn't that the statute doesn't authorize an exemption, but a lack of compliance with subsection D is the heart of the complaint, and the 1700 order abrogated the 563 order. So this becomes substantive. In a sense, it's a substantive denial of due process is what the argument is that I'm understanding. Would you address that?
I'd be happy to. 03D is inapplicable here, and I'd like to explain why. The commission, as we've said, under A, was allowed to implement these exemptions by order.
Yes.
D is a specific animal. What it involves, in every single sentence and phrase in the statute supports the commission's interpretation. It involves continuing jurisdiction where companies have already received exemptions, and it involves a sunset. So it says to the commission, for those companies you've already granted exemptions to, and for a limited period of time, you'll have continuing jurisdiction. And it's basically a ratchet to deregulation. It applies really when the commission wants to re-regulate an area that they've already exempted. The terms of the language
and then
make that clear.
Is 1700 a re-regulation of 563?
No, not at all. And especially regarding their issue of 490526, the complaint statute, the 1999 decision was the first time the commission had given any exemption relative to that statute to this industry. And so D didn't apply. It's really the appellant's interpretation is perverse on D in that there's really no question under A the commission could deregulate. It could have done this in one step had they wanted to and had it been justified. Appellants would have them do more of a conservative route, the first decision, but then would have to have a hearing and have, you know, the other thing is, it's important here in this context, is the standard in 03D applies where the findings of the previous exemption are, quote, no longer valid, which, again, clearly applies only if you're reining the company back in, if you're re-regulating. Saying our exemptions before in our deregulation decision, the premise there was no longer valid.
I understand you're running out of time, but I quickly want to ask, have you address for me, if 563 was subject to JCAR and codified, why does 1700 not have to be so?
Well, 563 was not codified, and
it was not part of the code?
It was not subject to JCAR, Your Honor. What counsel said earlier, his legislative history interpretation was that the General Assembly was mad about the commission not complying. That's absolutely not the commission's perspective. The commission always had an exemption in 111. 563 was never codified, and it never had to be.
Part of the administrative code.
It was never part of the administrative code. And I'd just like to finally address something briefly that Mr. Hart said about the OPIAG case. And he said that the court said RC 1.58 would be violated if the complaint statute had been repealed in that case. And that's inaccurate. In the opinion itself, all this court said in that regard was that 2.6, the complaint statute, was not repealed, and 1.58 is not applicable. That certainly doesn't imply that had it been repealed. In fact, the court, the key holding in that court decision, which is more than 30 years old, and the commission consistent here below in this case, the court said that no vested substantive rights were affected because the merit decision had not been issued in that case. And here, the complaints hadn't even been filed, and there's never been any reasonable grounds basis supported by the commission for the complaints. Those two things in the OPIG case had already occurred. The complaints were filed, the commission certified as reasonable grounds. The court still said because there was no merit decision, the retroactivity bar did not apply and was not violated. And thank you. I'll reserve my time.
Thank you, Mr. Nurse. Mr. Gassaway and Mr. Wallach, Mr. Nurse has taken all of your time, but I'll give you each a minute to see whether you can generate some questions from the court.
Thank you, Your Honor. Mark Wallach for intervening appellee Ameritech Mobile. I just have two very brief points to make. First, as has already been described, the purpose of the regulatory regime here is to regulate utilities. The purpose of the Public Utilities Commission and its regulation is not to create private rights of action. To the contrary, the private rights of action, the right for a complainant to file a complaint, is in support of the regulatory regime of the commission. And therefore, in this case, where the commission had, by its exemption, ended the regulatory regime before these appellants ever filed their complaints, there was perfectly good reason for the commission to find that there was no reasonable grounds to proceed with these complaints, since there was no longer any regulatory purpose to be served in hearing them. Second, the impact.
Does that, are you saying there was never to be a day in court?
Your Honor, I'm saying that the purpose for, it's not a matter of day in court, there's no court here, this is a regulatory commission. The only reason that individuals are invited to file complaints is in support of the regulatory purposes of the commission. And the fact that there were no more regulatory purposes here is one of the reasons why the commission was correct in finding there were no reasonable grounds.
I thought
grounds
your argument
here.
Was they needed to file a complaint before there was anything to complain about.
But Your Honor, here by the time these appellants filed their complaint, the regulatory regime that the complaint was in support of had already ended. There was no more regulation of these companies in this way at the time these complaints were filed. So there was no regulatory function that these complaints served.
And no way to appeal a decision to deregulate.
Well, Your Honor, that's what regulatory agencies are supposed to make decisions about, is whether regulation is necessary. Here, what we have are individuals who are trying to turn the whole commission structure on its head and say that even though the regulatory purpose has gone, they should be permitted to come in later on, years later on, and file complaints.
So when would they have been permitted to complain?
At the time that they had something to complain about. Back, they're complaining about actions that went as far as 1993, Your Honor, and they never complained about them until after the commission had already deregulated this area. They never complained at the time. That's what's different about these appellants, is that they waited. And that's my second point as well, is that the prejudice to intervening appellees here is enormous.
Quickly.
Because to try and go back to events that happened as far ago as 1993, after mergers, corporate reorganizations, employees' relocations, and find documents or witnesses is almost impossible, which is yet another good reason why the commission was correct in finding that there were no reasonable grounds to proceed with this application. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Wallach. Mr. Gassaway.
Mr. Chief Justice, may it please the court, Robert R. Gassaway of Kirkland & Ellis, LLP, on behalf of Respondent Verizon Wireless. I'll make one point, buttressing the questions asked earlier about the applicable statute for rulemaking purposes. And Justice Lanziger had this exactly right. It is, in fact, 4927.03A1. And that's because it's the more specific statute. The specific trumps the general. Less than 2 months ago, on August 9th, this court decided the Allen Knott Enterprises case, in which it said, and I quote, where statutes conflict, the more specific provision controls over the more general provision. That was August 9th of this year. And it interpreted RC 450504, which applies to motor vehicles only, as trumping RC 130244, which applied broadly to goods. That's exactly what we have here. They are not gutting the fact that this applies to the commission in general. It does apply to the commission in general, but 4927.03A1 does carve a specific provision for this very type of proceeding. Now, it's for that reason that we do not have to get into speculation or law review article analysis as to what a rule would be or an order would be as a general matter, or under any of the other general statutes. The specific provision here says that in order to implement the deregulatory purposes, you may proceed by order, and that's exactly what they did here. If there are no questions, thank you very much, Your Honor.
Thank you, Mr. Gassaway. Mr. Hart, you saved a little over 2 minutes of your time, a little more than 2 minutes of your time, but start out with 3 minutes. We've given appellees considerably more time.
Counsel, over here.
Sorry about that.
That's all right. Everybody's doing that today. I'm not sure what's with the system. Why did you not file earlier? They're like implying that you should have filed as back as 1993, and for some reason you didn't. They made it sound like you're sitting on your rights. What's your explanation for the filing now and not back then?
The rules that were in the 563 order, which were the original rules that applied to this industry, those were never promulgated. Those rules were not known generally to the public.
Were they known to your clients, though?
Those clients weren't my clients at the time. The clients came to me after the CellNet case ended in 2003. So at that point in time, I don't know the answer to your question, but I can tell you that the 563 rules were never codified. Not that they shouldn't have been codified, or that they as was insinuated earlier, and to go along with Justice O'Donnell's question, but the 563 rules weren't codified and were not known to anybody. It's that that's the problem, and that's the problem with the 1700
order.
So
your clients were operating under unknown rules? Is that what you're saying? Even back, even though you weren't representing them, they didn't know these rules existed? Is that your assertion?
I will tell you that they did not. I did not know the rules existed. It's by happenstance that I learned what the rules were. It's not in the record, Your Honor. But what happens in the, what happened in this particular case is that the rules are not known. The rules under which cellular operators or cellular resellers are supposed to operate aren't known. And it takes one person calling somebody at the commission and saying, hey, do you know about these rules? And then that person finding three other people, and that person may be getting to the right person. And that's the point of the 97 amendment. The 97 amendment said that insofar as rules did not go through 111, they're ratified. But in the future, you have to do it. They saw the problem. You can't have a situation where you don't know what the rules are, that you only know about these rules because you just happen to know the right person at the right time and that you asked the right question to get the rule. You need to be able to go to the administrative code and find the rule. And it's not true that the Budget Act didn't fix that problem. It did. It said specifically that although prior rules are ratified, anything else has to go through 111.15. 111.15 is very, very clear. If you look at 111.15, it says that a rule includes any amendment or rescission of a rule. Nobody debates that the 563 order provided rules for the wireless industry.
Did the legislature have the power to say that you didn't have to go through JCAR, you could do it by order? Are you challenging that statute?
I'm not challenging the statute, Your Honor. The legislature in that statute, it mentions rules, or it mentions orders. If you look at the statute, and this is at page 292 of my appendix, it specifically provides exemption for orders. It provides an exemption for any order respecting duties of employees. So the legislature was aware that that rules were promulgated through orders, and it said if it's an order that does this thing, that's exempt. It didn't exempt all orders. In fact, what it said was that rules include a number of things, standards, bylaws, regulations, rules. What the commission chooses to name something is not determinative. What's determinative is if it has general and uniform operation in the first instance, and in the second instance, whether it takes away a rule that had already been promulgated. That's where you have to look at when you're applying 111.15. There's nothing inconsistent with that rule and deregulation. The commission can certainly deregulate the industry.
Counsel, if I may direct your attention back to reasonable grounds, what standards should the PUCO use in assessing reasonable grounds, and why is it a 12B6 standard that you're, I suspect it would be your answer to that question.
Your Honor, you're right. Because reasonable ground, this is in a situation where we haven't had a hearing. There's been no evidence presented. All we have is the complaint. The commission is acting in a quasi-judicial nature. They're sitting there and they're going to decide a dispute between the parties, and they've got the complaint in front of them. They have to look at that complaint and determine, does this state a cause of action in the state of Ohio? What they're saying is they removed those causes of action, so therefore it doesn't state a cause of action. And for all the reasons that I've already mentioned, we don't think they could have removed it.
Well, your colleague, Mr. Wallach, has, as you heard, made an argument that went to reasonable grounds, that basically the PUCO was not going to regulate this area anymore, and therefore the private enforcement of rights becomes less significant to the commission at that point.
The commission doesn't have...
What's your response to that argument?
The commission doesn't have the option to hear a case because it doesn't feel like it complies with whatever their regulatory policy is. If a case states a cause of action under Ohio law that deals with utilities, this court has said that the only place that I can go to have that resolved is the Public Utilities Commission. They can't say we don't feel like hearing this today. If there are laws that apply, they have to hear them. I'll give you an example. They heard the Cellnet case. The Cellnet case was the identical case. As all four of these cases. In fact, the complaints are virtually identical. Okay, they heard the Cellnet case. If what they're saying is right, that the 1700 order took away the rights and properly took away those rights, the 1700 order was issued before the Cellnet case. Cellnet case stated a cause of action because the cause of action that it stated was under 563 and the relevant statutes. If those statutes were taken out by the 1700 order, they would have been taken out in the Cellnet case as well. You can't decide that I'm going to hear one case that does state a cause of action, but if you bring another case that states the same cause of action, that no longer states a cause of action in the state of Ohio.
But do you have any legal authority that supports your position that reasonable grounds is equivalent to stating a cause of action?
I don't have a PUC case that says that. There are a number of cases under 12b-6 that would say that if you state a reasonable ground, you're stating a claim that exists under the laws of the state of Ohio. I'm way out of time. to sum up, I'm just asking you to look at the law and apply the law as it's written. Apply 111.15 as it's written, apply 1.58 as it's written, and apply 49.27 as it's written. There's no interpretation necessary. If you apply the language of those statutes to the situation that you have here, you'll come to the decision that the PUCO erred. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Hart. The case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion. We'll take